magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 389, recording on Friday, February 22nd at about 4:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm Eli, with me is Jared. I was just telling Jared about, I saw Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Outstanding. I would challenge anyone to come up with a band that has more like bona fide like classics than Queen.
Yeah, they're one of the best ever.
You know, I mean, like, after the movie, I had like a bunch of Queen songs stuck in my head, and I like looked up the This Is Queen playlist on Spotify, which is like, I don't know, 60 or 70 songs or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, God damn, like every single one of these is good.
They're all good. And I always loved that they could play sort of any style and it sounded right.
Yeah.
Like they could do anything they wanted. It was cool.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, yeah, but the movie was really good. I highly, like, if you are a Queen fan, I highly recommend checking out Bohemian Rhapsody. It's such a bummer that, you know, things went the way they did with Freddie Mercury and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've been telling everyone to watch it. I've turned into a Bohemian Rhapsody, evangelist, as if
yeah,
that were a thing. So what's been going on in Jared Land? Oh, we got to crack open our beers. What are you drinking this week? Before we get carried away with an actual podcast,
I'm drinking Stella, which I'm not even a big fan of. But
you need a bottle opener to open that. You can't even twist it off.
They're in my fridge, so I'm happy to try and get rid of them, basically.
Did you buy them, or did someone bring them to your house?
Somebody brought them.
That's always the worst, when someone like brings beer that you don't like over to your house and like is like, oh, I brought a 12-pack, bud. I'm going to drink two and leave these 10 beers that you don't like and feel bad about throwing away.
Yeah, I try to be really good about getting rid of the things, the rando stuff that gets left in my fridge, but these ones have stuck around for a while, so hopefully this will be the end.
Hmm. I'm drinking a Beverage of Champions it's a bourbon barrel-aged coffee milk stout with sweet orange peel from a local brewery called Solemn Oath.
That sounds good.
Well, the ridiculous thing about this beer is that, so here's the problem. I go to these beer events that they host because I'm like a member of their little like barrel age society thing. And all the beers that they serve you on their little release days and stuff are, you know, like 10% plus ABV beers.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit around and you drink three or four of those, and then like buying all sorts of other beer just seems like such a good idea.
Yeah.
So this
I'm
is
sure
actually,
that's the point.
Yeah, well, this was actually really expensive. So this is a 12-ounce can. The 4-pack cost $40.
Jeez.
Which was one of those things where, like, the next day I was like, man, what did I spend so much money on? What the fuck's going on? And I was like, oh, a $40 4-pack. That's neat. Yeah. But what's crazy is that local bars are selling or attempting to sell these cans for the place by us is $17 for a 12-ounce can.
Holy moly.
I told the bartender, I was like, you realize that can is literally going to sit there until you guys go out of business, right?
She was like, I mean, maybe.
I don't know. Someone might come in that's like really hot for this stuff, but I don't know. But yeah, this kind of stuff's my jam. And then once I'm finished with this, I'm going to move on to a Coors Light. So...
High highs and low lows.
Yeah. Believe it or not, this is not only a podcast about Queen stuff and a beer, but this is also an iPhone Games podcast from the website toucharcade.com, the bestest place in the whole wide world to get your mobile gaming news from. I've got reviews, news, all sorts of other stuff worth checking out if for some reason you're just listening to the podcast and haven't seen the website, which I still don't know if that's a thing or not. I guess it's always possible, but...
We haven't heard. I've always, if somebody was randomly listening to this for the first time, didn't know what Touch Arcade was, I want to hear from them.
I mean, because I definitely like listen to some of the podcasts from tech sites that like I never read. Like I never read like The Verge ever.
Yeah.
But they've got like a couple of really good tech podcasts that I listen to.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I guess stranger things have happened.
It's possible, I suppose. But anyway, yeah, this this podcast website, everything we do is primarily sponsored by Patreon, which you can check out at patreon.com/touch arcade. If you're not wild about the Patreon thing, which I totally get, we would appreciate if you do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. Doesn't cost you a penny more, and we get the affiliate credit for whatever you buy. So
hopefully a lot of expensive things.
Yeah, well, we tell the story before about how Blake, a Touch Arcade co-founder, had a affiliate link up on like his personal blog, and someone like just came in and that likes the stuff he writes about, which is like retro computing stuff, and was like, oh, let me help you out, and bought like an entire apartment complex full of appliances, like microwaves or something.
Yeah,
see that? It was just suddenly like, oh cool, someone bought $100,000 of junk through my affiliate link. That's cool.
I know, that's why is nobody buying 200 microwaves through us?
I haven't looked recently to see what kind of weird stuff people are buying, but when we were really promoting it a lot before, people were buying like weirdly expensive stuff on the regular. So
yeah,
I guess if that's you, thank you very much. So kick this show off with a little bit of a bummer note, but not really. I am leaving Touch Arcade on the, 8th of March. We're going to keep doing the podcast though. This is not the last you've heard of me, and I'm going to stick around as much as I can, but shifting focus to something else that I will reveal before GDC.
I just need to figure out
the messaging behind it. When it comes out, people are gonna be like, oh, I understand now.
Farts on demand. You will go to anybody's house anywhere in the world.
We're actually
fart at their front door.
I'm actually pound disrupting the gig economy by adding fart deliveries.
Nice.
Like, so you don't need to get White Castle or Taco Bell on DoorDash. You can just go straight to the end result and pay someone to come to your house and blow up your toilet for you.
I like that idea. I like where this is going.
I mean, that's what Silicon Valley is all about, disruption, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing. Man, I did hot pot last weekend. You ever done hot pot?
Yeah.
I'd actually loop back to the beer event story. So bought a bunch of beer. Left there to get food, and I was like, man, you know what really sounds good? It's hot pot. And like, for whatever reason, Lindsay was just like entertaining every whim that I had that day. And man, we went to hot pot, and the next poor decision I made was, you know what sounds great is like the spiciest hot pot. And like, if anyone follows me on Instagram, they saw the picture I posted of like all the peppers that I fished out of the hot pot, like after I was just like drenched in sweat.
Good lord. I don't use like DoorDash all that often, but there was a time when, you know, I was fiddling around with it, and we really wanted Thai food from one of our favorite places, and it was like, well, let's just DoorDash it. And so we did, and I get the distinct feeling that people at restaurants hate DoorDash and things like that. Like, they hate having to do these to-go orders. And
I've definitely gotten that vibe.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's probably not a whole lot in it for the restaurant. So they probably don't like care super much, as opposed to like somebody that's eating in the restaurant that, you know, they want to make a good impression for or whatever. But, and also that's like just a bunch of orders just mucking up your kitchen flow or whatever. So anyway, we order it. We usually get it just hot. They have what they call Thai spicy, which is like supposed to be their spiciest, and it's pretty spicy, but it's not crazy. And so I ordered it that way. And then when we get it, they tape like the kitchen tag to the order, you know, for the to-go thing or whatever. And it was not called Thai spicy. It was called like death spicy or something crazy like that. And it was basically like, eating like instead of rice grains in like a order of rice, it was like, those were hot chili pepper flakes.
Oh my God.
And so it was so hot that Pam didn't even eat it at all. And it was hot enough to like blow my mind, but I was so stubborn because I had paid so much for it that I finished the entire thing.
Yeah,
and,
dude.
That was the worst mistake. The spiciest thing I've ever made and the spiciest aftermath I've ever had.
That's the thing with DoorDash, though, is that I don't know. I did it for, like, when they added it to my area, I was like, oh, damn, this is awesome. Like, I don't need to go anywhere. I can just get food. But, like, that stuff adds up so fast.
It does.
It's not even funny because, like, I don't get takeout, like, a ton, you know, but, like, it seems like you get takeout, like, anywhere. It's usually, like, I don't know, like, 20 or 30 bucks, right? And then DoorDash adds, like, another $10 on top of that, typically. And then you're expected to, like, tip on top of the total value with the delivery.
Right.
So you're, like, effectively paying, like, almost double.
I've also come to learn that there's, like, a step in the middle of that whole process where the DoorDash driver has the ability to tip the restaurant they're picking the food up from. So, like, you know...
I didn't know that. How does that work? Where does that money come from?
So, like, the order goes in, right? And the restaurant gets it, and they're preparing the takeout order or whatever. And then the DoorDash guy shows up at the restaurant to pick up the order, right? And it's not always ready on time, or sometimes, you know, it takes longer, or sometimes it's super fast. And so the idea is that if you get there and the order's done super fast, then you're going to be able to take it to the person that ordered it even faster, and hence should be getting, like, a bigger tip. And so the driver is expected to sort of, like, tip the restaurant based on, you know, how well and quickly they get the order ready for them, because that should lead to them getting a better tip. But the end customer never takes any of that in consideration. Probably just tipping, you know, $5 on whatever the order is, no matter how long it takes or whatever, or just stiffing the DoorDash driver altogether. Yeah. And so the drivers have, like, no incentive to actually tip the restaurants. And so the restaurants really have no incentive to, like, hurry up with those orders. And so it's just, like, a really bad cycle.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, because, like, I feel like these days, like, I just tip, like, 20% regardless if the service is good or bad or whatever else.
I typically
do, too. Just what I tip, you know? So, like, that's really weird to think that there's this other sub-economy of DoorDash happening. I mean, because, like, if the dude, like, if I ordered DoorDash and the dude came in, like, 10 minutes, I'd be like, I don't know, I already tipped you. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, my God, you came so fast. Like, here's a 40% tip, money. You know? Like, I don't know. That's weird. Anyway, so, like, my startup, it will just come poop in your toilet. So you don't need – it's the savings. There's a fitness element to it because you don't need to process those extra calories. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to disrupt. It's going to disrupt.
Disrupt the pipes.
Yeah. So, like, for me with my hot pot, like, I wouldn't have, like, 2 days of misery because someone could just come blow up my toilet. And I'd be like, oh, all right. Well, now that that's over, I can...
I'm satisfied.
I can get on with my life. But anyway, as I reiterated before a five-minute conversation about paying someone to shit in your toilet, this is a podcast about mobile games, so let's jump into some of the news of the week. If you're into the Sega Forever stuff, which... I guess means that you're just a glutton for punishment when it comes to Sega constantly re-releasing all the same shit.
AKA if you like Genesis games.
Yeah, Phantasy Star 3 and Phantasy Star 4 have been added to Sega Forever. These ones I shouldn't be so snide on, like, because these are games that I definitely did not play and I'm interested in because Sean has said... things about them. I don't remember.
I think they definitely find a wider audience this way because you can play them for free. But also, they're the type of game, because it's an RPG and it's turn-based and whatever, plays a lot better with virtual buttons as opposed to, like, some of the more action-oriented games or whatever.
Right.
So I think it's a nice fit. And I also really like that Sega's been bundling these re-releases into a single app. So these are all three games in one app, and then they did that with Shining Force, and they did that with Golden Axe. And my money guess is that the next series they'll do that with is Streets of Rage.
So is this a single remove ads for all three games? Is that how it works?
You can do it per game, or you can do all three for $5. Per game for $2, or all three for $5. But because they updated the existing Phantasy Star 2, there's probably a lot of people that already owned that and thus already own the remove ad thing. So it probably ends up being cheaper just buying the other two by themselves. It'd be $4.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. It's still pretty small price to pay to get, like, a classic game, have no ads. have, you know, ability to save whenever and mess with screen options and junk like that.
Well, I mean, another thing is that I feel like, and I, you know, my memory has faded over time, obviously, but like, I remember these classic, like, 16-bit RPGs being like, when you had the paper of game prices from Funko Land, like, these were the games that like cost more than retail.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So this is actually a pretty cool, I don't know, kids these days don't appreciate that kind of shit, I guess, but
true.
I don't know, neat opportunity to go through. So I redact my snide statements about these particular games, but that, to be fair, that's just because I'm so tired of Sega releasing Golden Axe and Altered Beast that any opportunity I can get in there to twist the knife, I will take. So let's see, Square Enix has a treasure hunting RPG called Last Idea. That so we think this is only coming out in Japan, right? Like, that's the thinking.
I think that it's the only that is confirmed for right now, but I think it probably will end up coming out everywhere. I just think it's funny that there's not somebody in the chain of command somewhere to bring up the fact that Last Idea is just rife for jokes. And
I know.
A way better title.
When this was getting talked about in Discord, I thought it was in the context of a joke. Like, this is Square Enix's Last Idea.
It like, sounds not... like the Onion Gaming, you know, parody of this is Square Enix's next game. It's Last Idea. It's their last idea.
It's their last idea, and it's a super freemium gacha game that they're releasing in Japan.
Yeah.
So I don't know the. I guess this is, you know, there's absolutely no news on localization, but I would assume if it does well that they would port it over eventually and all that.
Who knows with them? And the other thing is, like, man, so many of these companies, big companies, release like these weird free-to-play mobile games, and some of them live for like 2 or 3 years in some other country and then just shut down and disappear and you never hear from them again. And it just seems like there's so many of them out there, you can't even keep track. So I don't know. I find it hard to like get too excited about stuff like this.
I completely agree. Like, if you put Square Enix's various gacha games in front of me and we're like, all right, $1 million goes to the person that can match a screenshot to the game name, I'd be like, all right, well, I'm just leaving. I'm not even gonna try.
Yeah.
So let's see, bummer news of the week goes to the EA Firemonkey Studio. Fire Monkeys, rather, sorry, that was working on Real Racing 4 has seen some pretty ridiculous layoffs. People are saying that 40 to 50 people of a 200-person company. I've seen reports on Twitter that mention like upwards of 80 or more people getting laid off, which is interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, it's... Because it seemed to me that, I mean, admittedly, I don't know, you know, how Real Racing's doing, but like, they have been aggressively updating that game.
I think it still makes a ton of money. I think I don't know. I don't see this as being a result of like the game is doing bad or anything like that. I think it might just be that they felt they were too bloated with employees or something. Mm-hmm. But it definitely sucks because both those studios were awesome, and then, you know, when they combined, it seemed, even though they were bought by EA, it seemed kind of like poised for greatness. And depending on your outlook, I mean, Real Racing 3 could be considered a huge success. I mean, it's probably a bitter pill because so many people love the first two Real Racing games that were premium or whatever, and then rejected this free-to-play version so hard. But then also, this series got in front of so many more people because it's a popular social free-to-play game or whatever. So I don't know. It's like, it's a sucky thing no matter what, when people lose their jobs, but, I guess this means there is no Real Racing 4, or are they going to finish it?
I mean, it makes me wonder, if they maybe came to the realization that like, does it make sense to release a Real Racing 4 if we've got a captive player base in Real Racing 3 that's like eating up every update and spending and everything else?
That's kind of what I thought.
Because we've talked to a bunch of developers over the years that, you know, we'll release one game that does really well, and then, like, do a sequel. And, like, and maybe the sequel does well, like maybe it doesn't, but like it's not like the games, not like it like amplifies the success of either game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, each game will have its own community, and you know, people that are with the original game will keep playing that, and people, and it's yeah. difficult to migrate people over to another game, basically.
I think like, Temple Run felt that problem when they released Temple Run 2, although they righted that ship, and now Temple Run 2 is massive, but I still don't think it was sort of the same type of success that the first one was. And there's probably still millions of people that had Temple Run 1 that never realized a sequel even released or anything like that.
Yeah, so. I remember talking to Keith Aramanji quite a bit about that. And my thought was like, and I don't know how you'd ever A-B test this to know whether it was the right move or not, but like, try just, because like their problem was like they had a ton of people in the original Temple Run, which is just like not as good of a game as Temple Run 2.
Right.
And they also had the suspicion that like, you know, when people would hear like, oh, just download Temple Run.
Yeah.
Like they wouldn't know like, oh, they're talking about the new one, not the old one, right?
Yeah.
So my suggestion was like, well, why don't you try like renaming Temple Run 2 as Temple Run and just like, you know, sunsetting the original Temple yeah. Run and see how that yeah. does. But I mean, when you're a studio that just really only has like two games that are doing really well, like I understand why it's a scary thing to think about doing. So I don't know. I hate when people lose their job, and I know that like these, you know, the Australian game developer community is not massive, so this hits way harder than it would otherwise. You know, if this yeah. is like, you know, Zynga or like another San Francisco-based company where it's like, oh, I got laid off, I don't give a shit. Like, right. there's six other companies on this block that are hiring people like me.
Right.
So I don't know. I hope everyone's doing all right. I've seen a lot of like outreach on Twitter from other game studios are like, hey, we're always hiring, like we're, you know, we're in Sydney or wherever. And so that's cool, but it's crazy to think that like this is the remnants of Firemint, right, that made Flight Control and stuff is now kind of being, you know, brought up in all this. So whatever, I guess we'll see what happens. So let's see, I'm gonna absolutely butcher this name. I don't even want to say it. It's gonna be embarrassing. Toshihiro Nagoshi.
Sounds right.
How do we feel about that? He's a big deal in the Yakuza scene. He says he'd like to see Yakuza Online released in the West, because right now that is exclusively a Asian thing.
Yeah, this is the Yakuza games, not my forte whatsoever. Although they have always looked cool, but yeah, I just don't know anything about them. Don't know anything about this mobile spin-off thing. Yeah. Just nothing. Just guy got nothing.
Yeah, no, Failgunner actually gifted me a spare copy he had of, like, I don't know what Yakuza game from, like, a Humble Bundle or whatever, and I was just like, man, I just thought that I don't know anything about this series, and, like... Yeah. I don't know how I've lived 36 years on this worthless planet and never played this game that everyone's wild about, but like, I don't know. But anyway,
are you going to read the trailer?
No, I mean, the trailer is all in Japanese. So anyway, dude says that he'd like to see it released in the West, but it's not making any promises.
Yeah.
Which I guess for Yakuza people is like the very first indication that anyone at Sega has been like, hey, maybe we should release this in North America and Europe and stuff like that, which seems to have Yakuza fans excited.
Right. To their credit, he wrote this story and people were like excited immediately. So there's an audience out there.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like there's definitely a tier of story on Touch Arcade that like in our like backend writers channel is like, I don't know anything about this. This seems weird. But I know people that are into this are going to lose their mind. So, like, let me write this up and try to not sound like an idiot.
Yeah.
And this Yakuza story definitely is the latest greatest example of that.
Right.
So surprising news with regards to the Battle of Polytopia, which if you've never played this game, it is, I don't know, like if you could cross like the classic game of Populous with like Civilization with like a multiplayer component. Does that seem fair?
Sure.
To describe it, that's Battle Polytopia. Like, there's friends of mine that don't play any games on their phone, will ruthlessly shit on mobile as a platform, but like, if you could pull up their total time played in Battle of Polytopia, it would be in the hundreds of hours.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, so it's coming to Steam soon, which I guess gives it the you know, rubber stamp of bona fide real game.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is that the multiplayer is going to be cross-platform across PC and mobile. So I don't know, if you haven't checked this out yet, like, it's free to download and try and stuff on the App Store, and I seriously don't know a single person that has tried this game that has said anything other than like, holy shit, like, this is way cooler than I was expecting it to be.
There are still people that leave comments on like a 4-year-old article sharing their multiplayer codes for this game. It's incredible,
because that's how the multiplayer works, through like the code spamming thing where it's like, oh, here's my 6-digit alphanumeric thing, like, invite me to a game or something like that.
Yeah. I always appreciated this game, but never got into it myself, mostly because I'm not like this isn't really my type of game anyway. But I always kind of wished that I would, you know, break through and get into it, because I feel like it's such a rad fit for mobile and such a rad like idea for something to just play a few minutes at a time or whatever. I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a 10th try and see if that's the time that it'll stick.
Yeah. The, I'm in the exact same boat. Like, I've really tried to like this game, and it's just kind of like just not my thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, that being said, like, I do have local friends that, like, you know, we've been out to dinner or whatever, and they're like showing me them, like, you know, making their moves and stuff, and I'm like, God, that looks so cool. Like, I wish wish I enjoyed this, because like, what you're showing me now looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. But so, if you haven't downloaded Battle of Polytopia yet, super, super high marks from everyone that likes that sort of thing. And like, you get an idea whether or not you like it for $0. So no harm in trying. So this next game, how do we think we pronounce this? It's 3-E-A-L-I-T-Y.
Threality? I would say Threality.
Really? Oh, so when I was reading this, I was reading it as like, oh, one of those things where like the three is a B, like Beality or something like
Beastiality?
That.
Beastiality?
Well, yeah, I guess.
No, I think Threality makes the most sense.
This looks actually pretty cool. Like, we got some comments of people that were like, oh, another runner, I don't give a shit. But it's like, three runners you're playing at the same time.
Yeah.
But like, how do they switch between the.
So you don't. So your actions carry through to all three games at the same time. So, you know, ideally the levels are designed to know that and not like totally screw you by making you jump in the top game, but then making that kill you in the bottom game or whatever. But also, even though you're playing three games at the same time, if you do screw up in one, it just kind of drops out and you continue with the other two games until you die in one of those, and until you're finally down to just one game.
I mean, it seems like a super cool concept.
That's what I thought too. It's definitely like very messes with your brain trying to keep track of all three games at once. And even though it's only, you know, jump or attack, there's only two inputs. It still is like kind of hard to, I don't know, get your brain to do the right thing.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I really respect developers that are able to take a genre like the ultra saturated runner genre and come up with anything that you can post and be like, hey, this is actually like cool and unique.
Pretty interesting. Yeah.
And I'm excited to play it, because like, I don't know, like as far as like the games that are extremely overdone on the App Store, like I think, you know, Endless Runner would be right behind like Match 3, right?
Yeah,
we're definitely in the mix of like stuff that everyone's kind of tired of. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so Threality, number 3, EA, like reality, but with a 3 instead of an R. It's coming out next week, right?
Yeah, I think Monday.
Yeah, Monday the 25th. This looks. I'm excited. Actually, genuinely excited to try that out. So Vignettes, which is a game that we saw at GDC, how many years ago? Two, 3 years ago?
A while.
A while ago. If you ever played it, it's what's interesting about this is like when they showed us this mechanic was like, oh fuck, like that is cool and clever.
Right.
And now it's become like a mini game in so many different games. So the way Vignettes works is you've got like it's like a bunch of different like 3D objects, like 3D junk, right? Like on a 3D plane, you basically have to like, I don't remember, is it tilt controlled or touch controlled?
I want to say you touch and rotate the objects.
Yeah, so you like touch and rotate shit around until like you figure out like, oh, okay, if I rotate this way, it's a toaster or something like that. The latest Shadow of War game, or is that the first one or the second one?
I don't know.
So the Assassin's Creed set in the Lord of the Rings universe.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Most recent game, Shadow of War, I think it was. What was the first one called then? That's really gonna bother me. So this game is a mini game in the Xbox game I'm talking about. Like
that's
the
interesting.
The whole like fiddle around with the joysticks to like make the 3D object into a thing.
So
anyway, it's kind of neat. These Vignettes was a cool game, but it's a premium title. Like it had an end, and you played through all the things. Like you unlocked all the objects, and you're like, oh, all right, that's cool. Done with this. So they're releasing a expansion. Is the expansion free?
Free update. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Cool. Clarify that with developer. It's coming out March 6th for $0, and the game is launching on Steam.
That's cool. It's a really neat experience. It's kind of more like a toy than a game, and some of the solutions are one of those super obtuse type things where it's like, oh, I didn't do anything to solve it. I just fiddled around long enough to figure out the goal or whatever, you know what I mean? But it doesn't make it any less like cool or like interesting, but it's definitely not like a super strategic sort of game.
I'm looking up the actual title of, I think it is Middle Earth Shadow of War is the new one. Yeah, the sequel to 2014's Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, Shadow of Mordor.
Shadow of War, highly recommended. It's on, I think it's on Xbox Game Pass. Or it was on Super Sale on Xbox Live, I don't remember. Really, like, surprisingly good game. Like, it was one of those things that I, like, blasted through in a weekend. I enjoyed it so much. Vignettes, March 6th expansion's coming. If you bought it, if not, it's worth checking out. It's really cool. Coming on Steam, I think mobile is probably the best way to play it. But, you know, if you're a PC gamer, then cool. So... funny story of the week. This is actually, I have a two-parter.
All right.
So these dudes in Norwich, I think is how you pronounce it. Although I don't know
English.
If it's people pronounce where, so it's spelled Norwich, which I think might be pronounced Norwich.
I don't know.
Hopefully no one's mad at how I'm mispronouncing this. But anyway, so the Norfolk Showground, which as far as I can tell is like their like county fairground sort of equivalent in the United States, they held this thing called Fortnite Live, which have you noticed this in your area at all, where like all these places are doing like Fortnite-themed things that are just like complete... like they're just using the name Fortnite to get people to come, basically. Like, is that a thing in Sacramento? Oh man. Well, so, do you guys have like I don't know if this is a Midwestern thing. Like the concept of like a family fun center, is that a thing out there?
I don't know. I mean, we have like there's like Scandia and stuff like that.
Well, so a family
there's like parking lot carnivals occasionally and things like that.
No. Like so, a family fun center here in the context of Midwestern United States is like a large building that will have like a large single story building, like kind of like a you see these pop up in like like old Walmarts or, you know, like old Home Depot, like old big box stores that have vacated, that'll have like space segregated out for like, and you go there for like birthday parties and stuff where it's like, oh, let me rent this room for like, or this area for like $50.
Yeah.
And they like serve pizza there. Like they basically, it's like you go there and you pay them a reasonably insignificant amount of money to like host a party there for kids.
Right. Okay.
Typically.
Yeah. We don't really have that I know of.
Yeah. That, I mean, well, you know, one of the many benefits of urban sprawl of the Midwest, I guess. But, but yeah, so I've seen a lot of those kind of places, and those places are also kind of like tangentially related to trampoline places. Do you guys have those in California?
We have trampoline places or like, you know, roller rinks and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the trampoline places and the family fun centers are in my area are like doubling down on like, oh, Fortnite night, or, you know, like Fortnite theme party, or come jump to, you know, we're doing a Fortnite lock-in at this trampoline place or whatever.
Interesting.
And, you know, it's like when you look into it and like I'm the snide jackass that like comments on these things when they get like spammed over Facebook. You're like, oh, that's interesting. What does it have to do with Fortnite? And they're like, oh, we're going to have a Fortnite dance contest and like we're going to be playing like the Fortnite music and there's going to be like a Fortnite drawing contest, you know, just like dumb shit that just has to do with Fortnite. But they're advertising it as like, oh, it's a Fortnite event. So this Fortnite Live thing that was in the UK is that, but like mixed with a parking lot carnival. Does that seem fair?
Okay. Yeah.
So they were charging, I have it in the article here. So, £12 to get it. So £12 sterling, to get in, just for entry into this, and then £20 for a bracelet that would give you like unlimited access to their different like heavy air quotes like attractions there.
Yeah.
So that works out because the pound is the vastly superior currency to the US dollar, about $41.
Yeah.
For everyone that came in, they had about 3,000 people come. They had 9 staff members managing the event. And it was like all of the shittiest stuff that you could just like call up, like it's like basically like these guys called up like one of those like party rental places and was like, hey, what's the biggest blow up thing you got? Okay, cool.
Right, right.
You got a climbing ball?
We'll put a Fortnite sign on it.
All right, neat. Like, do you got, you know, like stuff like, oh, do you have like, I guess I don't know what the equivalent would be in the UK, but there's like definitely companies here that are like the places you call where it's like, oh, I'm having a party in my backyard. Like, you need a tent. I want to do, you know, like, you know, like a electronic like bull rider thing, like that kind of stuff, like those people that have like those things. So it's like someone called up one of those companies and was like, yeah, I'll just take everything you got and we'll name it like based off Fortnite things,
and we'll tape photocopies of the logo everywhere.
Yeah, we'll tape photocopies of the logo everywhere. We'll charge people $40 a piece to get in.
Did you ever buy that big inflatable battle bus you were talking about?
No.
You should have, because you could throw your own festival in your own yard.
Yeah. Well, so this was, what event were we at where this was like the topic of discussion?
I think it was last PAX.
PAX. Yeah. So yeah, actually that fits right with the timeline, because that was in like September. So I just realized that I've got the sponsored by Come to Us on the fucking podcast video.
Are we not sponsored by Come to Us?
I mean, we might be. I'll blink it a couple times.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So anyway, where was I? So what? Spirit Halloween, right? They license a bunch of Fortnite junk from Epic to do like Fortnite costumes and like the
actually licensed it.
Yeah, and like the cherry on top of the whole Fortnite like collection of stuff that they were selling was this inflatable battle bus that I want to say was like $500. Does that sound right? Or like $400?
Something like that, because I remember we were talking and you're like, man, I don't know, that's a lot of money to spend on something dumb, but at the same time, I could probably advertise, you know, bringing it to birthday parties and junk and charge like $100 for it, and a few parties later it's paid for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you totally probably, I would have liked to see what would happen if you had done that.
I know, like, yeah. Can you imagine, like, the fucking side hustle of, like, oh, damn, like, you're doing pretty well these days. Like, you got extra money to spend on stupid shit. Like, what are you doing?
Renting
like,
out my inflatable battle bus.
Renting out my battle bus. But yeah, that was the idea. I don't know. That seems solid to me still, maybe.
Yeah.
The problem was what turned me off is I saw, so they sent a bunch of them to, like, the big YouTubers that then set them up in their yard, and it was just, like, the most disappointing iteration you could possibly imagine of the battle bus. It was like a tube, basically. Yeah, yeah. And like when it blew up, it was like a circle,
yeah,
or like a long cylinder that sort of looked like a bus.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't know, maybe I left a lot of money on the table. Who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah, I would love to A/B test that alternate universe where I bought the battle bus or multiple battle buses and like went ham as like,
yeah,
the go-to guy. But anyway, so this this Fortnite Live thing seems like it was a complete clusterfuck. It was, if you get off on the misfortune of others, reading the like Facebook comments and Twitter mentions surrounding this thing was like just unbelievable. Because like basically everyone that came had a shitty time.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, they advertise this thing as like, oh my God, it's like Fortnite, but in real life.
Right.
When it was like a bouncy house that had an 8.5 by 11 thing with the Fortnite logo taped to the front of it.
Right.
So yeah, they're issuing refunds for people and all that sort of stuff. Like, yeah. So if you look up the story on Touch Arcade, they have this thing called the Cave Experience, which is literally a like trailer with some camouflage netting over it that it's you so apparently bad. Like walk through or
I don't know
army crawl through. I don't know. So anyway, my kind of like take of with all this, my hot take of the article was that it's really kind of shitty that people are doing this sort of stuff because like, yeah. I feel like Epic has been, I guess Epic's cool about a lot of stuff, but I guess, you know, like expanding out to like the way that people typically treat like very hot IP, they've been like uncharacteristically cool
mm-hmm.
with people like, you know, hitching their wagon to the Fortnite train basically.
Right.
And because that, like no one's done anything shitty, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It's like when the trampoline places by my house, when they do Fortnite stuff and then like, you know, yeah. They post videos and shit. It's like, yeah, these kids are, like they look like they're having fun. All the lights are green. Like they're doing the backpack kid dance. Like right, that's right. Fine. You know, like, but when you have these things that are like bona fide disasters, like it just makes Epic look bad and it's just going to result in them being like, all right, well, I guess this is just a thing we need to police now.
Yeah.
Which and, sucks.
You know, it's parents won't know the difference too. They'll be like that Fortnite thing for that game you like was such a disaster and such a ripoff and blah, 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 blah. And they don't know the difference that it's not some official thing and it has nothing to do with Fortnite, you know? Which
switching
sucks.
Gears. Switching gears, Coors Light. Anyone keep a track? but yeah, so anyway, part two of this story. Headline is as follows. Epic Games is suing the organizers of the disastrous Fortnite Live Festival.
Well, there you go.
So yeah, in like the like 24-ish hours that followed, as because like everyone picked up on this because like spoilers, if you put Fortnite in the headline of something, like it's going to generate traffic on the internet right now because
Fortnite and Fire Festival in the same.
Oh yeah, well that was the thing too. So between the time, like so when I posted that in the morning, so that had transpired over the weekend.
Yeah.
I posted it like first thing Monday morning U.S. time, and then. I feel like we were one of the first like American outlets to post it because everything was in like The Guardian and The Independent and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then like when the American outlets got a hold of it, it was like Fortnite Live is the Fortnite Fire Festival. Like as right. many comparisons you could possibly make to the Fire Festival, which like
yeah.
really made me think like, God, I really fucked up on that story. Not using Fire Festival in the headline because that's also like shitting on Fire Festival has yeah. been red hot for a while, but seems... particularly hot right now. Did you watch either of the documentaries on that?
I watched the Hulu one. And it is
you should watch the Netflix one.
I know, I want to. We didn't want a back-to-back because we thought that would be too much overload, but I'm curious to see them both.
Well, so here's the thing with the Netflix one. the people that made that documentary are the marketing people behind the original Fire Festival trailer.
Fuck Dave or whatever.
Fuck Jerry.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So they made that documentary. That's interesting. Because they were the guys that basically had zero comment for the Hulu people.
Yeah. Well, so that's why. It's a really... it's already off the beaten path here. If you're like, oh, I check out mobile games. The Fire Festival's a thing. Two documentaries, one on Hulu, one on Netflix. The Hulu one focuses... would you say it's like more influencer-focused?
Influencer-focused and really focused on the guy. I forget his name. The guy behind it. Because they had the interview with him and stuff like that.
Is it Billy? I think he had like one like a really like super basic white guy
name. Yeah. Right? I don't know why I gave his name right now.
But yeah, the Netflix one is very similar, but it's really interesting how the Fuck Jerry guys like are very careful to absolve themselves of like any wrongdoing in the way that they tell the story.
Interesting.
When like arguably you could say that the people that created the original trailer, like showing off what Fire Festival was going to be, are just as complicit, if not more, than everyone else involved in the thing.
So, so you haven't seen the Hulu one?
I like read the cliff notes on the like what the difference between the two is.
Because the Hulu one has one of the main people they interview in it is one of the guys from Fuck Jerry that was like the lead designer on that whole, you know, ad campaign or whatever. And at the very end of the documentary, like the Fuck Jerry statement is basically like, oh yeah, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about and he's lying and all this stuff. He is, you know, he's basically don't listen to anything he just said. And that guy's like, yeah, whatever. Everything I said is basically what happened. And he's kind of paints the same portrait you are, is that they were very much a part of this and definitely responsible for, you know, the outcome.
Yeah. And what's interesting about the Netflix one is that like, if you like, don't eat the narrative they're feeding you, it's like, you're sitting there being like, man, like you guys did a lot to like get this ball rolling. And it seems weird that you're like trying to shift blame to other stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
What a crazy situation. That whole thing is still crazy to me. Like 2 years later.
Yeah, so I highly recommended. I need to watch the Hulu one still. You need to watch the Netflix one.
Yeah, we'll reconvene next
week. Yeah, reconvene next week. So I don't know. So anyway, the conclusion of that story is, Epic suing those dudes for basically, like, you know, really fucking up. The Epic issue statement of journalists basically says, the quality of our player experience is incredibly important to us. Epic Games was not in any way associated with the event that took place in Norwich, and we've issued a claim against the organizers in the High Court of London.
Doesn't sound good.
Which I think is one of those places where people wear curly wigs.
Mm.
So you know they're in trouble.
You know what sucks for these poor people is if they refunded everyone, they didn't even get the money from it.
I mean, they should have fucking known better. Like, you know what, sell 3,000 tickets, have 9 people show up and get like a bouncy house. That's
right.
That's insane.
Right.
But anyway, I guess the trend of bad video game events continues with that. So Us 2 is working on 2 new mobile games, which I think we can assume is Monument Valley 3 and 4.
Nope.
Maybe not. It's a cool video. You should watch it. They go into a lot of detail about, like, is this video old or new, the one that we posted?
This is new.
Okay, cool. Because I watched it, I was like, damn, that was super interesting, but I don't really follow their
YouTube. This is a little series that Red Bull does called Levels, and they've I think this is the 5th episode, but they're really cool. I think it's like 10 minutes, and just a neat little documentary on Us too. And they talk about the success of Monument Valley, and then sort of where they're at now, where, you know, it was so successful, they're sort of known as the Monument Valley company. And so how do you break out of that when you're trying to make new games? And how do you follow up some crazy success like that with something brand new? And, you know, will it live up to expectations and all that sort of pressure? So I think that's kind of interesting. They have 2 games going simultaneously, and it seems like they've kind of divided up their staff into 2 different teams to work on the 2 different games. And so it'll be interesting to see when they launch them, too. Because that's kind of hedging your bets. Also, if you release two of them, like maybe one will be good and one's bad, or, you know, whatever. But they definitely seem like very, very artsy sort of experience games, rather than like they're making a platformer or something like that.
Yeah. So here's a take for you. You can tell me the temperature of this, whether it's hot or cold.
Yeah.
I think that these games will all be on the Apple game subscription service.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. All of them.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
What temperature does that take?
I'd say that's like a
mild hot, salsa take.
It's like a hot tap water. Hot tap. Not boiling water, but
it's
hot.
A tepid take.
No, that would make sense because, I mean, the whole Apple subscription thing, I don't know if you have it in our stories this week, but Google's up to something with their gaming.
Yeah, that's for GDC. So the next story, actually.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic segue.
Thank you.
But yeah, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Basically what I'm saying is for these game subscription services to mean anything at all, they have to have a big library of games. And Apple, no doubt, is courting a lot of developers. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were the ones pushing them to be like, hey, we need more than just one game from you guys. You know, make two. The more the better, I think, for a service like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of interesting shit going on with that, it seems like. Yeah. So, but yeah. As the article states in bold text, shrouded in secrecy is basically the theme of this whole thing. So I don't know. Like, we know Us2 makes really good games. The cool part about Us2 is that, like, they're attached to the design firm Us2, and it really doesn't matter if the games make money or not.
That was, I think, the key to success of Monument Valley, is they basically were like, hey, just make a game that's good. Take all the time you need. There's no financial expectations. And I think when you took all those pressures away, it really allowed people to be like, what do I just want to make that's cool and is enjoyable, instead of being like, what can I make that's going to be like a hit?
Yeah.
And, you know, the most people are going to like it and it's going to make the most money. When you remove all those pressures, you can just make something that, you know, so many people consider Monument Valley like art. And I think that's what they were allowed to create by not having those pressures.
Yeah. Yeah. The main dude over there,
Dan Gray.
Yeah.
Best dude.
Like, not only that dude's like super awesome to begin with, but like, I cannot imagine like falling into a better role than all right, cool, you're in charge of the games division of this like super high-end design firm. Make the coolest thing you can. If it makes money, cool. If not, oh well.
Right.
You know, like, Jesus, that's like dream job territory. So,
well, I think it's cool too, though, because it's not like people are like, oh, that's awesome, I don't even have to work hard because no one cares. It's like they only hire people that are super driven and super passionate about, you know, being artists and
whatnot. Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that they're taking their foot off the gas because they don't have pressure or anything like that. As you can see from that video, they put their own pressures on themselves to have like a successful follow-up, because, you know, if the next game bombs, it doesn't matter from a financial sense, but it will definitely damage all of their egos and confidence and stuff like that. So that's a major thing.
Yeah.
And so they do have those pressures, but I still think it's an interesting environment to allow people to create in. And it'd be cool to see more companies be able to do something like that, especially filthy rich companies.
Yeah. I guess you just need like an ultra successful company to kind of just like latch your trailer onto, and then,
yeah,
whether or not you're...
I always think of, like, we talked about this before, but like EA talked about like Skate, and they're like, yeah, the Skate series was successful and we could probably make a new one and it would probably be profitable, but not like as profitable as Battlefield or as profitable as FIFA, so it's not worth it to us. Instead of being like, fuck it, like, let's make this thing that people like and want, even if it's a smaller section of the audience and it won't make us as much money as this other thing, why not still do it?
Right.
And that's sort of their mindset, that really financial driven mindset. So,
yeah,
I guess fuck all that noise.
That's, you know, the give and take of a publicly traded company, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you mentioned the Google GDC stuff. That's the next story on my list. So Google sent out invites to select members of the gaming media, larger tech media and things like that. surrounding a keynote they're giving at 10 a.m. Pacific time on March 19th, which has led to loads of speculation surrounding like what this would be about. And since it's during GDC, you know, in San Francisco and stuff, like it seems fairly obvious this is going to be gaming oriented. Yeah. Google, whether or not you paid attention to what Google has been doing, they kicked off this thing that was, you know, a secret, a super secret project, which was leaked almost immediately, which internally was called Project Yeti, which is their sort of like OnLive equivalent, if anyone remembers OnLive. So like the basic idea of all these different streaming services is you render all the game stuff on your super powerful servers and then just like blast that video stuff over to the client that is playing it.
Right.
So you don't need like, to put it in the context of the PC world, like they're a pretty reasonably decent gaming PC. I upgrade my video card in it, like not every year, but maybe like every 2-ish years, like that upgrade is around like $1,000 typically. And that allows me to like continually play like the newest and coolest PC games, right? But if these streaming services really take off in a big way, and they're able to, and this is what makes it interesting for Google, is that like latency is key with these different streaming services, because like when you press a button to make your dude jump, like he needs to jump like immediately, like it needs to be imperceptible, like the latency between that button press and the actual video stuff. So they need data centers like hyper local to everyone, because like, so when OnLive was a big thing back in 2010 or 11,
10, 11. Like, yeah, it was a while ago.
I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was like, I could walk to where their servers were. So for me, like playing OnLive at home, like I turned into the biggest like OnLive evangelist ever, because I was like, holy shit, like this is crazy. Like this thing that I have, it's like the size of a deck of cards that basically just like takes USB power and plugs in my TV or HDMI. Like I can play any game on that they just render on their servers. Like this is the best thing ever. But then I talked to like friends of mine back in Chicago, and they're like, I have the same thing. Like it fucking sucks. Like when I press jump, like the dude, there's like a perceivable lag between all that. So I think that, you know, Google has their servers spread out like all over the world.
Right.
So in theory, they should be able to have these different like game servers like super local to everyone. So everyone would have like that experience I had with OnLive in Los Angeles, no matter where you live, with, I guess, within reason, more or less. So Project Yeti became officially announced as Project Steam, or Stream rather, not Project Steam. And it got officially revealed late last year, I believe. And they, I think, just gave away copies of Assassin's Creed Odyssey to like anyone that got selected for the little beta test thing, which, like ran inside of your, like you had to have a Chrome browser on your PC, but it was like, you just played the game inside your browser and it worked just on like OnLive and everything else. So that's what people assume this announcement is going to be, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. Like the first of which being, I feel like we're really on, and you know, at TetraGate we've definitely been like, you know, hitting this ball for years now, but I feel like we're closer than ever to being on the verge of it like really not mattering what platform you play your games on. Because like, so if this Google thing is a success and Project Stream is rendering all the games in your, you know, local municipal data center and just like blasting the video down to whatever you're playing on, like it doesn't matter if you're playing it, you know, on your gaming PC or your like your Android smart TV or, you know, your iPad or whatever platform supports like receiving that stream.
Right.
Which is really kind of an interesting thing to think about.
Well, I think it's just it's more complicated, but it's following in the same footsteps of other media, because everyone expects now, I have Hulu, I should be able to watch Hulu on any device I have, or Netflix or whatever. Books are sort of, you know, the same sort of situation. So it only makes sense that gaming would want to go that way too, but it's because it's interactive, it's a more complex situation than just being able to stream a movie to someone.
Right, right. Yeah, I sort of start to make this comparison in the article, but I was like, I don't know how hard I want to go down this rabbit hole because like I'm just gonna get roasted in comments. But it seems like we're getting, and Microsoft has sort of like shown this with their plans to make Xbox Live like cross-platform and stuff.
Yeah.
And since we posted this, they've had an additional like weird announcement that they are allowing or considering like all the Game Pass games to just like work on the Nintendo Switch.
Wow.
Too. Which yeah. I don't know like how official that is or how rumory that is or whatever else, right. But it kind of just proves my point that like the companies that are looking at this sort of thing from like a long-term perspective are starting to realize that like we're very much hitting a point where like all the hardware is fast enough.
Yeah.
And it like really doesn't matter what you're playing it on.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of like, we want you playing our games in our service on whatever thing that you want to play them on.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's, that seems like the way we're heading, right? I mean,
yeah, you can kind of see Apple's moving in that direction too, because, you know, there was such the big hullabaloo about them changing their forecast and, you know, with iPhone sales being down. And at some point, you're going to be so saturated that you can't sell too many more iPhones because so many people have them already. And so it seems like they're really trying to switch gears to focus on being like a services company with their Apple Music. They're going to have like the media streaming service like Netflix or whatever, and all that kind of stuff. And so it sort of makes sense that gaming might go in that same direction.
Yeah. Yeah. So
because remember how it used to be, you know, you'd want to make money on the hardware or whatever. And so you'd want to have good games so that people would buy your system because that's like what you made your money on. And it's kind of like flipped totally now where margins are so thin on stuff like hardware that you want to make that money back on different services and selling software and stuff. So
well, and the hardware is getting so weird now where it's like, I mean, I have friends that are still rocking like an iPhone 7.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're like super happy with it. Like no need to upgrade. Like maybe they like took advantage of like that Apple program where you got your battery swapped or whatever else. But other than that, like everything works, everything runs, like it's fine.
Yeah.
If you don't have a 4K TV, like the Xbox you bought or Xbox One you bought, what, five years ago, still fine.
Yeah.
The Xbox One X, like, you know, everyone's getting a 4K TV now.
Yeah.
It's fine for the future. Yeah. Like, you know, the PS4 and PS4 Pro, similar situation. I don't know.
I do really feel like we're either at the end of there being a hardware successor in video games, or, you know, this will be the last generation, because, you know, smaller bumps like in the Xbox One X or PS4 Pro make a lot more sense. And then not even really worrying about having to upgrade hardware makes the best sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe this year they might announce like PlayStation 5 and whatever the next Xbox is. But I think a PlayStation 5 is more likely, and I think Microsoft is more likely to go for like the not doing a whole brand new hardware cycle thing, and rather doing some sort of upgrade thing or having a game service.
I mean, see, like to me, like Microsoft has really indicated that like they're getting out of the hardware console business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just being like, because I mean, like really, they're just doubling down on the fact that like they have good games, and like if you want to play Microsoft games, you got to be on Game Pass.
They could every year or two release like a slightly bumped up, you know, version of the Xbox or whatever. But by and large, they'd probably care about people all being Game Pass subscribers that have games on like all of their past systems and just kind of an endless supply of stuff you can always play, including all the new stuff. And so I don't know. I just see that being more likely going forward.
Yeah. Although the problem that I'm seeing and I'm experiencing this like right now with like you have all these different subscription services. Like, so as far as
you definitely get fatigue.
Yeah. Like I know we've talked about this at some point in the podcast where it's like in the video world, it's like like me personally, like I subscribe to Hulu, Netflix, and HBO Go.
Yeah.
Which cost me like, I don't know, like 30, 40 bucks a month, something like that. Right. And like, I that's like, that's my limit. You know, like I don't care what's on Showtime. I don't care what's on Stars. Like I'm not going to subscribe to those. Like I don't,
right.
I'm not going to bother. Yeah. And I think that it's going to be interesting seeing what happens in the gaming world, because I think you're going to see similar sort of like subscription fatigue as people are like, dude, like I subscribe to like Discord Nitro and EA Origin and, you know, like Xbox Game Pass and everything else. Whatever. So, you know, I don't know.
I can see that too.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see how this all shakes out. I feel fairly confident in saying that Google's Project Stream is going to come to mobile in some respect.
Yeah.
Like whether that's like Android only, that seems very reasonable to think that's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Particularly considering like Apple's take on the Steam, what was the Steam?
Steam Link. Yeah,
Steam Link. It seems almost impossible for me to believe that Project Stream is going to have this like blown out iOS presence or whatever. So
I kind of agree.
But I guess we'll see what happens. I don't know. So GDC is only a couple of weeks away, and we'll see what. I would be shocked if this doesn't launch on Android. With them being like, hey,
definitely.
Hey, you know, every Android device can now play the best AAA games. Pair any Bluetooth controller you feel like to your Android device, and you're in.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe there's like, oh, here's the official Project Stream controller.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like just pair whatever you want. We don't give a shit. Right. You know,
that's the dream of a lot of iPhone fans for a lot of years. And it's something that Google could actually do, and Apple probably never would.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. A lot of interesting stuff coming up at GDC. I personally be very curious to see if, how serious this Apple subscription is, and if Apple's going to have like subscription people swarming GDC, and how much of that is going to leak out.
Yeah.
That's my second big thing I'm interested in with this GDC. So I don't know, but yeah, we're running kind of long. So why don't we, park this podcast in the trailer park of the internet and, go from there. So, again, you know, the Touch Arcade, the podcast, everything we do is primarily sponsored by Patreon. If you like all these things and you want to throw us a buck or two, highly appreciated. You can do that at patreon.com/Touch Arcade. I mean, hell, I'm giving $4.20 to a page that produces memes. So
talk about subscription fatigue.
It's a real thing. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Right. If you're not a Patreon, don't like the subscription thing, but do your any shopping on Amazon, would really appreciate it if you do it through Amazon, or I'm sorry, toucharcade.com/Amazon. If you love Discord even half as much as we do, and you want to talk about iOS gaming, we'd really appreciate it if you come to our Discord at discord.gg/toucharcade. Other than that, we basically have a presence on everything at /toucharcade. So twitter.com/toucharcade, like you know, facebook.com/toucharcade, you name it.
Match.com/toucharcade,
grindr.com/toucharcade, tinder.com/toucharcade.
Yeah. Looking for the right one.
I don't know, papajohns.com/toucharcade.
Yeah. What if that was a thing?
Order your pizza at Papa John's. Use code TouchArcade. I wish. That would be awesome. But anyway, we'll catch you next week on another exciting episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.